going.
The clutch, the thrust, your cock, my bust. Ooh, shimmy, shimmy, shimmy. Ooh, gimme, gimme, gimme your lust. The throttle, the glide, you wanna slip and slide. Ooh, wiggle, wiggle, wiggle. And side, real high, you ride my lust.
Bonsoir, Monsieur Dan. It is Sunday, February 3rd, 2013, and you're now listening to Playtime with Sandra Radio. I am your hostess, Sandra London of livinggrind.com, and I just lost a bit. So congratulations to the Baltimore Ravens. Better luck next time, San Francisco 49ers, but you still have my heart. I am broadcasting to you live from the sunny and wintry beaches, all at the same time, of Southern California, in connection with Blog Talk Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, Digital Podcast, and Naked Girls Radio. I will begin tonight's broadcast with the song Houdini Act by Mongrel. Here you go. Okay, that was Houdini Act by Mongrel. And now for the next song, I'll play a song called Alcohol by Hell's Addiction. Here you go. Or not. Okay, hold on 2 seconds. I'm going to play Edge of the Night, and I'll get that song working for you shortly. Yeah, how are those ravens doing? Anyways, here we go. Here's Edge of the Night by Azatron, and I'll be right back with you. The call-in number is 858-815-2333. Once again, 858-815-2333. Try with that song that I was mentioning just a bit ago, a song by Hell's Addiction called Alcohol. It's pretty awesome. Check it out. Let's hope it works.
Thank you.
was Hell's Addiction with the song Alcohol. Hope you all enjoyed that out there. And yes, seeing as how I lost the bet for the Super Bowl this evening, I owe Lamar Gafford of youwerejustthinkingit.blogspot.com a tribute video to him and his site and his awesome powers of, like, knowing who's going to win or picking the better team at the moment. Who knows? But anyways, congratulations, Lamar, for winning the bet. Alrighty, I have a couple different news things gathered, and I will say some happy birthdays to famous people living and beyond in just a little while. And I also wanted to let everyone know who may not be aware, I finally completed that story that I mentioned one or two episodes ago, Annie and the Apple Bottom. And I will read that for you live here this evening on this here show very shortly. And I'll explain also where the story was originally set to lead, and you'll see in effect what actually came about when you hear the story. And I hope you like it very much. But I will do that very soon. Right now, let's see. I believe I will play something for you here. I will play French and Freaky Friday real quick for you. This is the audio version of a segment that I filmed for Sandra London TV. And it's frightful and delicious, and it expresses my fright in a different, indirect way for having lost tonight. I don't know. I watched the game, and I was not disenchanted at all by how poorly San Francisco was playing in the beginning. I knew that they were known for their second wins, and I'm very proud of how they played. I think they did excellently, you know, when it all comes together. So I think they're awesome. And Kaepernick is really hot. So let me just put that out there. But anyways, here you go. Please enjoy French and Freaky Friday, and then I will be right back with you.
Hello. Hello. Is anybody out there? Woo. Hi. Hello. Is there anybody out there? It's Friday the 13th, and I could totally scare you right now if you saw my hair. It's currently in witness protection program underneath a lovely red towel. Oh! What the freak, man? The freaks come out on Fridays. You want to see my towel? You can see my towel. But I'm not freaking showing. Oh, my glasses still hold on. Okay. Now I'm blind, but now you see a towel and DJ and me, and I don't even know if I'm pointing this correctly because I'm blind officially right now. But I love you anyway.
It's on Skype.
Skype's downloading something weird. You know, they were just bought out by, like, I think Microsoft or somebody. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Scary. So scary. Anyway, I just turn on the webcam because that's how I do. Totally unscripted, unedited. I don't know what's going to come out of my mouth. Not much right now. What? Well, okay, tell me, BJ, what would come out of my mouth if it were to come out? Food poisoning was yesterday, and I'm probably over that. I've been okay lately for the past 24 hours, let's say. Tell me, give me some ideas. What would come out of my mouth? Let me know.
I can't say it. I just can't.
Be
use your imagination.
Be poetic. What? Come on.
I'm not a poet.
Come now.
Yeah. That's,
come now.
That's one thing that might.
That's gross.
Well, I was trying to be poetic.
I either swallow or gargle. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm working on some videos for tonight. I need to figure out what to do with my hair. It's in hiding right now. I need to fix it. It's like not available for the viewing public at the Momo. But soonish. But I want to put something out, and maybe you'll see this. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll see, like, you know, only the hair done stuff. But anyway, I did want to say hi. And I don't know, I suppose, okay, I was asked recently why so often I choose not to show my face, and that's usually because when I'm working, I'm in nerd mode, and to me that means UGMO mode, but I don't know, a lot of guys still find it hot when they happen upon me, but I don't, I'm like really vain, so I think it's weird sometimes. Anyway, so I'm usually wearing glasses, no makeup, and my hair could be any which way. So that's usually sometimes why. And then sometimes I kind of just want to see how expressive the body can be and the voice. Like, can you be lured in and captured by my voice, by DJ's voice, by our bodies? And if I must say, I think it's kind of sexy, at least half the time. Or more. No, fuck. Freak to that.
All the time.
Oh, all the time.
All the time.
All the time. What was I thinking? Always hot. Always hot. Somebody.
That's right.
Somebody in the world thinks I'm beautiful. And my boobs look massive right now.
It's fucking huge.
So who needs a face? Who needs a face when you got tatas like that? Am I right or am I wrong? Should I bust out in some French too? Tu vas entendre quelque chose très très sexy et chaud. Je peux parler toute la nuit comme ça. Tu me dis, okay? All right. Okay, don't leave English speakers. I'm done. I'm done for now. So you'll hear more later. And
much more.
I'm going to show my profile. A little bit more. And I'm being nice. It's Friday the 13th, and I'm not going to scare you with what's underneath this towel. Wait,
nice.
I look like a lardin.
Kiss
right
it.
There.
Kiss.
Do I need to take my fucking pants off?
Mm-hmm.
I actually said not even swear word. Yeah. Okay, only a little bit, because this is, I'm trying to make this friendly. This is bald.
It's friendly to me.
Okay, as long as you're friendly to somebody.
You're any help, right?
Okay.
You gotta turn this
one. More. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This robe name, that's
okay.
Nothing.
My pleasure. Excuse me, somebody got to do this. It's a dirty job.
Oh my god!
It's dirty.
No, it's fresh and so clean. Mm-hmm. But it'll get dirty.
It will.
And approximately.
It's coming.
As soon as the camera gets on.
That's right.
What is it? Am I like, am I repping this brand? What kind of towel is this? This freaking tag keeps showing all the time.
No, that's
it. No, it's made. China. I'm repping China. Peace, China. I rep your towel. And I need to turn this camera off because I am about to be too obscene. Happy Friday. Woo!
That was X Factor with the song Break You. Alrighty. Okay, so to start things out for a few little happy birthdays. Where did I put it? Oh, there we go. happy birthday, 1824, Elizabeth Blackwell, American physician, 1842, Sidney Lanier, sorry, American musician and poet, 1874, Gertrude Stein, 1894, Norman Rockwell, 1904, Pretty Boy Floyd, the gangster, 1920, Henry Heimlich, American physician, 1950, Morgan Fairchild, 1956, Nathan Lane, 1974, Julie Meadows, and 1976, Isla Fisher. Happy birthday, and happy birthday to anyone having a birthday this week from now forward. So history lesson real quick. On this day in history, in 1690, the colony of Massachusetts issued the first paper money in America. Oh, note to self and note to Larry from bornababe.com. Okay, cool. 1783, the American Revolutionary War, Spain recognized United States independence. 1809, the Illinois Territory was created. 1830, the Greek Greek sovereignty was confirmed in a London Protocol. 1834, Wake Forest University was established. 1870, the 15th Amendment was ratified, guaranteeing voting rights to citizens regardless of race. 1918, the Twin Peaks Tunnel in San Francisco, California, began service as the longest streetcar tunnel in the world at that time at 11,920 feet. Is that why I thought they'd win? I don't know. 1959, the day the music died, huge plane crash. 1984, John Buster and the research team at Harbor UCLA Medical Center announced history's first embryo transfer from one woman to another, resulting in a live birth. And also in that same year, 1984, the STS-41B launched using Space Shuttle Challenger. In 1995, astronaut Eileen Collins became the first woman to pilot the space shuttle as mission STS-63 went underway from Kennedy Space Center in Florida. I actually visited there, 13 years ago. 1998, Carla Faye Tucker was executed in Texas, becoming the first woman to be executed in the United States since 1984. Go Texas. Yeah. Alrighty. Well, I'm going to play a song here real quick, and then I will do a live reading of Annie and Apple Bottom, and I will preface that with some details of what it originally was going to be and what came about. But in the meanwhile, please enjoy this next song. I will play Down Underground by Lemionis, and I'll be right back with you. The call-in number is 858-815-2333. Once again, 858-815-2333. Yeah. Down Underground by the group The Lumianas. Okay, so, where were we? Yes. Okay, so for Annie and the Apple Bottom, I had, for this story, I had the title in mind for quite some time, and I kind of had a general idea of the storyline, how I wanted it to go. Originally, it was to involve a couple, with the woman being a very passionate woman, but somewhat frigid as far as anal sex goes. And so she was also open to the idea of another woman joining her and her beau, who was like very amply endowed in the Apple Bottom regions. And it was sort of going to be like a first time gleaned from that of another. So I guess her experiencing what it would entail, quote unquote, to partake in the joys of anal sex, and then, you know, greedily towards the end wanting to go at it and, you know, experience the same. That is what the original storyline was in my head, yet just the other day, that Tuesday or Wednesday, is when I just, I don't know, I was, what was I reading? I'm not quite sure, but I just decided, you know what, I want to, like, stretch my brain in a sense and sort of, like, think outside of the box, quote unquote, and I want to be a body part. And I want to make that into my story, Annie and the Apple Bottom. And indeed I did. And therefore, the story that I'll read for you right now is what resulted. So let me know what you all think of it. Yes, I welcome feedback. There you go. Anyway, so Annie and Apple Bottom. Okay. Deep within the underskirt of Annie's home-spanked cheeks lies the bottom of the apple. Like a silent serpent, I will creep in and out, furtively and spirited, with the pride of that all-American pie within a bird's-eye view. The hearty swells of each ample cheek will wax and wane at each rising crescendo. They will redden in unison with each loving thwack from my fellow partner and thigh. We are a joint operation, compelled by the force of each digit, in search of destiny, desire, and derision. Yet, alone, I will propel, inch by inch, flesh to flesh, as I ascend and unleash. As I expand, I will continue to make headway through this luscious apple valley. As I submerge, I will immerse myself in this warm, welcome confinement, the borders sending electric jolts to build up and tease me with the prospect of the most wicked nirvana, a tight, warm, wet hearth to swallow me whole. At the brink, I will emerge victorious, at a standstill, if you will, but only momentarily. From this cusp of natural treasure, I will divulge my most glorious exposition of all, and slick streams of sustenance along the endless miles of flesh defining my sweet Annie's silhouette. And another set of cheeks, and before her very eyes, I am 8 inches tall, an officer and a gentleman. I will take you to my leader. The end. That was Annie and the Apple Bottom, written by me, yours truly, Sandra London, on January 30th, 2013 at 3:00 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So yeah, so there you go. That is available to peruse at your leisure on to liveandgrindinla.com or liveandgrind.com, along with many others and various entries and the like. Yeah, but there you go. Annie on the apple bottom. Alrighty. So, in the meanwhile, I will give you the next song, which will be... Freak Show by Cheech Marley featuring Tony Yates. And I'll be right back with you. The call-in number is 858-815-2333. Once again, 858-815-2333. And you're listening to Playtime with Sandra Radio.
Yeah. Young James, Cheech Marley, Tony Yates.
Girl, I like how you work them hips and thighs.
How you
dancing all around, it got me hypnotized. And you got my attention.
How you drop it to the floor.
All eyes on you like you're shooting a free throw.
Ooh, that
free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
Shake it for me slow, then split it to the flow. I'm hypnotized and glamorized by the shape of your thighs. Aroused and mesmerized, your apple bottom just right. Let's do some role playing. You pink it, I'm Wesley Pipes. Mr. Beat that thing up and tell the kitty keep the night. Even if it's hard here, I don't bark, I just bite. Get it. I've been grinding all my life. You met my girl, Ecstasy. She can take you for a ride. Up away, our destination cloud nine. Why I want that nookie, is you crazy or just blind? You a five-star chick, a certified dime. You put on exotic shows when you vibe to my rhymes. All the ballers wanna hit you, tell them dudes stand in line. Get real plump, give me your body plus your mind. And we can share this limelight, 2010, being crying. Girl, I like how you work them hips and thighs.
How you bouncing
all around, it got me hypnotized. And you got my attention.
How you drop it to the floor.
All eyes on you. Like you're shooting a free throw.
Ooh, that
free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
I got you driving down that road when you're free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
Free throw.
You bounce it like a basketball, baby. Let me double dribble. If we had some referees, I'd gladly take that woofer. Ain't no exaggeration on that pole. You's a winner. Other girls ain't too switchy. You make them look like beginners.
Free show.
fellas, why don't you come over, check this out.
Ulterior Motives with the song Nice Ass. Yes. Alrighty. So for the next song, I will play a song by Miss Peachy called Back to This Paper. And I'll be right back with you. Let's see. The call-in number is 858-815-2333. Once again, 858-815-2333. And I'm not yet using that new... what was it, Tactic 3D headphone, microphone, full-out set just yet. I was going to for this episode, but I got all wrapped up in the Super Bowl. Sorry. But yes, next week, let's try again next week for that. But in the meanwhile, here is Back to This Paper by Miss PG.
Now let me get back to this paper. Now let me get back to this paper.
Everybody claim they down for the meal town, but when it's time for show, they can't be found. But wanna get in they bodies and try to clown. It's cool cause they know this gotta kill, I wear the crown. No gown needed, so bitch nigga just beat it. In this game you know you ain't competing. You're just the worst of time, this whole time you'll shine. Taking a stride cause we know you have no pride. And you just cried, watch me glide by. Y'all, I'm feeling sky high, it's a natural high. No weed needed, just call me conceited. Silly asshole, let's just face it. She can't see or be me, Miss P. See the first play to Bruce Scott, ENT. So bye, bitch, watch her ask me and cheat. Marlon, yeah, you about to break it down.
Now let me get back to this paper. Now let me get back to this paper.
I've been gone for a minute, but I ain't been high. I'm just quite busy, man, in some other states grinding. Local jokers mad, cause they still at home crying. While I'm on the Midwest, East, and West Coast grind. Face got fat, so my cash multiplying. Haters like dubs, we gon' always leave them crying. If it's ever controversial, we gon' load up and ride. Out back, bustin' AKs and every night. I'm letting these rappers know that this game all mine. My flow like VVS's, ain't no way I ain't gon' shine. Get me in any jam, I won't never drop a dime. If you droppin' one on me, I'ma kill you, I ain't lying. You smoking on some pine, that shit don't get me high. I'm blowing on that threat with Miss PG and Bruce Scott. Give me my money, man, or your service I deny. You do that bullshit and over here, that don't fly.
Now let me get back to this paper. Now let me get back to this paper.
That was Miss PG with the song Back to This Paper. You can listen to more of her music on Naked Girls Radio, and I believe she also has a Reverb Nation account, so just look for Miss PG. And let's see. Ah, yes. In the spirit of body parts and minding them, yeah. Like a little while ago, I recorded an audio clip of me reading a, reading a 10-minute play, which actually is a bit longer, quite a bit longer than 10 minutes, but hopefully you will enjoy it. It's called Watch Your Head, and it was on the website 10minuteplays.com. The author of this play is awesome and phenomenal. I hope I did some justice to reading it, but you can see for yourself. Here we go. I will play for you. Watch Your Head, the play on the, from 10minuteplays.com. Excuse me. Here you go. Good night. Okay, thanks.
Oh, jeez. So, when do you want a soft hook? All right, I need to write that down. Okay. Gotcha. Hmm? Oh, no. No problem. Really, it's no problem. I can do it. But I can do it. I like saying that. So, let me set the scene here. That will entail a little background, so bear with me. I mean, really, bear with me, okay? If at any point it seems I'm rambling or long-winded, just tell yourself or, like, nudge each other and say, aw, well, bless her heart, her head blew up. Okay, the opening matinee had gone pretty well. See, and what had been a bad summer for both my friend Merritt and myself, acting in this two-woman show, had been the only shaft of light, and we'd look forward to doing it. We worked our asses off. We had an abbreviated rehearsal time, and still we felt good about it. Luckily, of course, the audience didn't know of any of this, nor were any playgoers aware of the chaos backstage, such as painting of the set beginning only at like 11 a.m. this morning. I'll confess, I was terrified that afternoon, but we got through it before an audience of 10, so onwards and upwards, right? As we dressed for the evening show, Merritt and I kidded each other, horsing around. I heard the pre-show music kick in, and I did my ritual, a quick, "En el nombre del Padre, del Hijo y el Espíritu Santo." And I told myself, this will be over in a couple hours, and I can have a drink and relax. Except, this time, somehow, I didn't buy it. A couple hours, get a drink, relax. I had a weird feeling that it was never going to end. Ridiculous, right? The show was going well. Merritt and I, quite frankly, were cooking. For a time, anyway. I know now that it happened. Sometime towards the end of Act 1, I didn't start to feel effects until, like, after intermission, and then, yeah, well, the it I'm referring to, I like to call it, that time my head blew up. Not overly snappy, but it's either that or I spent 4 years in New Mexico, and all I got was this lousy brain hemorrhage. So, when we come out of intermission, my head starts to hurt, like, terribly. And I'm still performing, pushing myself, and a very confused Merritt throughout the scene. I don't know what I'm saying. I was not really in control of what I said. My voice sounded flat and mechanical, but we went on because I don't know how to stop. I remember the director shouting at me, not unusual for that ass, but unexpected in front of an audience, and then I heard him tell the crowd that the show was canceled. What? And then we went to the hospital. Someone asked for my cell phone to get my emergency numbers, my family, and I couldn't use my left hand. My time at the hospital is remembered, if at all, in flashes, a snapshot, jagged shards of recollection. They add up, I guess. For instance, as appreciative as I am to the staff of the ER, why do they ask questions if they aren't going to listen? My favorite was the medical history drill. Is there a chance you could be pregnant? Not without a miracle. What was that? Beg pardon? They talk in fevered, whispered, hushed tones amongst themselves. Is she pregnant? She must be pregnant. Wait, she might be. We need to know if she's pregnant. Hello? Did you notice a bright star or three wise men following me in here? Then there was the CT scan. I told them I was claustrophobic. I told them, yet they were surprised and angry when they had to pull me out and sedate me. And let me add that sedated does not equal deaf or unconscious or oblivious or stupid. I heard the cheery instruction that someone needed to notify my next of kin. Gee, thanks. Just because someone lies at the brink of becoming a human-sized can of V8 juice, or Snappy Tom, if I prefer, does not mean they're not there. They are. I was largely out of it, I mean, really out of it, for about a week. But a few things stand out in vivid technicolor, such as the exorcist who came to administer the last rites, which also go under the fuzzy title of extreme unction. This particular priest, I would have found frightening if I hadn't been immobile and really thirsty. Dressed entirely in black, he gazed dolefully in my direction, advanced slowly for added drama, I suspect, then loomed over my face and intoned, "Would you like to discuss your mortal sin?" I wondered what was next. A pop quiz? Maybe a PowerPoint presentation? Other moments and thoughts that somehow rise to the top of the murky soup of that period include the realization that a week into this picnic I still had stage makeup caked all over my face, that watching SpongeBob SquarePants is infinitely more enjoyable on morphine, that all the time, day in, day out, I was cold, that even though the whole initial episode sometimes seemed like an elaborate joke, it was unlikely to be so. For reasons of logistics, if nothing else, it would have taken a lot of planning to set up the intracranial bleed, the projectile vomiting, the care flight priest, my brother appearing at my bedside to read from the Harry Potter book. I don't know anyone that organized that. If anyone ever comes your way using the phrase blended diet, get the hell out of there. If you can move, that is. My introduction to this was a tall glass of warm beet puree, as if this improved so mightily over beets in any other configuration. Other treats from the Devil's Cuisinart included blended tossed salad, liquefied lettuce with a piquant hint of ranch dressing, and the lasting indignity of needing to ask, "May I please have another sip of cake?" The less said about my demoralizing assisted showers, the better.
In my memory, it looms as the cool mix of some 1950s hydrotherapy and the barren enclosure where they give circus animals a good hosing off. I'm not a big fan of rehabilitation therapy at first. In the best of times, I don't suffer fools gladly, so... Besides, I still felt in moments this was all part of a big ruse, but maybe I was at the center of an episode of Pumped. The first therapist came to me, her arms laden with paperwork. I said, I may not be up to lots of administrative work, quite yet. Well, this is what I wanted to say. I couldn't, you see, because the left side of my face was paralyzed. My speech was difficult and uncharacteristically terse. I think Clint Eastwood was locked off. The next therapist asked me to examine a photograph and identify the five things wrong with it. I said I couldn't. She asked why. Because there are six, I told her. She was unamused. Unsurprisingly, this was the same young woman who one day peered at me over her clipboard and asked if my parents were still Hispanic. I found more reward in my sessions with a neurologist named, bless his heart, Dr. Flitter. One afternoon, I was speaking more easily by this time. He asked if I could explain the significance of Hamlet's soliloquy. Since I had written my thesis on the play, I was glad to oblige, and we had a nice conversation. Around this time, I began to hear many of the personnel refer to me as high-functioning. That's great, I longed to shout. I have 2 master's degrees. I'm still not deaf. I decided, however, this would be impolite, and kept my mouth shut. In time, I soon deduced high-functioning. Remember, that much of their chatter was coded conversation 4. Isn't there some other hospital that can take the crack of this vile, overeducated bitch? And so, at my prodding, they made contact with Fort Worth's Dr. Robert Nieto, a friend and neurologist and playwright, as it happened. Shortly thereafter, I found myself being packaged and airlifted back to Texas, closer to my family and a doctor who knew me, who understood my temperament, and who just might, in time, give me a few answers in return for the millions of questions I'd been asked. But first, of course, I had to tell my story to a whole new cadre of nurses, therapists, secretaries, etc. Had I actually died and gone to hell? I considered this scenario quite seriously for a few days. The warm beet puree gave credence to the idea, but I finally decided that it was ruled out by the absence of animatronic children singing It's a Small World After All. Post-brain trauma therapy only sounds like a self-important rock band. It's actually an avenue of treatment designed to make a given patient functional and even attempt to bring the individual's abilities back to pre-trauma levels. Since I was regarded as high-functioning, I was told that after I'd mastered walking and talking and showering by myself, the focus would be on assessment. Lots of assessment. In other words, they wanted to determine exactly what sort of disabled, overeducated vegetable I was going to be. Assessment means testing, and I was no stranger to taking tests. I'd loved it in my pre-trauma existence, but now the stakes seemed much higher, and I soon had an unshakable sense of myself as a failure. My self-esteem was further undermined by lots of people telling me what to do around the clock. You know, I love that. And a strange assortment of persistent fears and worries that filled my thoughts. I worried that I was going to miss a day somehow. What? It's Thursday? What happened to Wednesday? Where'd it go? or I get hysterical if I realize I didn't know what time it was. I hate it being alone. Ever. A misplaced pencil could bring me to tears. And let me emphasize, no one's ego has ever started to soar as long as they required an escort to go to the bathroom. Then here's something you need to understand. As good and vital as they are, as much as we need them and owe them, hospitals are not the best places to heal. This is true for many reasons, not the least of which is that as you get better, or think you're getting better, you want out of the hospital. Maybe you're not ready to go rock climbing, or swim the English Channel, or resume your career in theoretical physics, but if you can feed yourself and construct simple sentences, you're ready to leave. And odds are, the good folks at Our Sisters of Flagging Mercy are ready for your departure, too. I know a nurse who's resisted many offers of advancement and promotion and increased income, all if she leaves her work in surgical recovery wards. This, of course, is a land of gaudy, gauzy silence, where patients spend their most immediate hours after leaving the operating table, comfortably mute in the pillowy bosom of noble pharmaceuticals. When asked why she turned down chances for money and position, my friend says simply, "I like my patients." What's so special about patients in surgical recovery, you ask? Once everyone agrees you're headed for outpatient status, things really ramp up. Therapy intensifies, and there's no time for frivolity. Every evening, when the night nurse asks if there's anything else I needed, I'd say, yes, a vodka martini with extra olives. Tolerance for this banter ran out when everyone else in the brain trauma wing took to ordering cocktails, too. Similarly, my caretaker is predictably dour when a drop in my blood pressure had dictated that I be given an IV. "There's not much else I can do," she said flatly. I responded with, "Oh, so I guess working on those one-handed cartwheels is out of the question, huh?" She considered this for a second and then asked, without humor, "Is that what they've got you doing in therapy?" "Yes. Yes, it is. I'm actually not in therapy. I'm just preparing to audition for Clown College." On one occasion, my therapist insisted we play catch. I'm afraid it looked more like an oddly mean-spirited game of dodgeball. Later on, she gave me the test of trying to walk the aisles in the hospital's cluttered gift shop and not bump into anything. Hell, I couldn't have done that the day of my life. Finally came the day when I was declared an outpatient. Now, lest you overestimate the magnitude of this liberation, let me emphasize that being an outpatient is rather like being on parole. The tether is short, your circumstances are limited, and lots of people have their eye on you. Still, I was free. Free to stay in a patient friend's house. Free enough to have my own room and bathroom. Free enough to only require the presence of a shower chair. And the rented wheelchair I'm happy to report I used but a few times. Most importantly, it was only now that I realized just how fiercely determined to recover. And recover totally. I really wanted. Finally, I was on my own. And getting better, really didn't involve jumping through hoops or pleasing someone, or even trying to do enough just to shut some up. Now I was playing for keeps and playing for me. That made all the difference. Outpatient therapy offered its own brand of hilarity, of course. I sorted screws and wingnuts in the box and thought it not much different from a tech theater class years before. There was a computer exercise entitled Tower of Hanoi. Cheery, huh? That involves stacking monkeys of various sizes atop one another, until the topmost creature reached the apple that dangled above his head. Two questions came to mind. One, is Hanoi renowned for its plentiful orchards? Secondly, it bothered me that the bottom monkey never got to eat. Personally, I'd never allow a group of friends to clamber on top of my head if there's nothing in it for me. I kept this opinion to myself. I did not remain silent, however, in performing a response time test, which they told me would determine if I'd ever be allowed to drive. On the wall, they projected a giant grid divided into several squares. My assignment was to press a button every time I saw a light pop up in any square. Unfortunately, they discovered I was actually trying to predict which square would light up, sort of testing the test. Firstly, they switched me to a computer exam and reminded me that my future as a driver depended on the outcome. This time, I would stare dutifully at the screen and pound the spacebar each time I saw the letter E. I remarked that I'd driven for years and years and never, ever seen a giant E lunge in the oncoming traffic. Again, they were not amused. Many of the therapeutic activities concocted for outpatients seem like bizarre hazing rituals. You know, do this stupid repetitive thing for no good reason until we decide if you're good enough. At least pledges get drunk. The first time the therapist told me we were going to attend an outing, I was really shocked. After all, I've spent a big chunk of my life in the theater and among theater people, so that verb had a very specific meaning to me. Who's going to be outed? Another patient? That seemed unnecessarily cruel. Once again, I paid the price for thinking too much. Our outing was simply a van full of brain trauma patients dispatched to the grocery to gather ingredients for next week's occupational therapy. I like to look back on this period and believe I was pretty stoic, if not outright tough, triumphant, testament to the human spirit, or displaying other qualities well suited to a movie on Lifetime. But one afternoon, after an especially rigorous battery of tests designed to improve my processing speed, I lost it. I really did. I was trying to assemble these blocks in a prescribed pattern, and it was simple, and I could see it in my head, but I couldn't make my hands do the work. And so, meltdown. I was sobbing all over the goddamn blocks. And the therapist, she's great. She spoke softly and she said, "Does anyone ever explain exactly what happened to you? Did they tell you?" And of course, no one had. They told me I'd be alright after they told me I wouldn't live through it. They told me not to mind someone taking me to the shower or feeding me liquid pie. They told me there's no substitute for hard work, not to be too hard on myself, but they just needed to ask a few questions, and that sarcasm had no place in the therapeutic process. They told me that I was doing great, that I needed to work harder, that I'd be good at the new, and that I'd have to accept my limitations. They told me that they needed me to take just one more test, one more time, just give it one more shot. And then they told me not to cry. But nobody ever had explained what the hell went on in my head. When my head blew up, what really happened? Well, this woman with a soft voice and soft hand, she did. She showed me a picture of the human brain and explained what a 3 centimeter bleed was. And it occurred to me that I should quit crying and become aware. Make myself aware of just how lucky I was to be walking and talking and have enough cognitive power to cry and get so goddamn mad because I can realize what my stumbling blocks were. That was the distance I traveled so far. A sense of proportion is a very valuable thing. To see things in scale to the world around you. See, I mastered those damn blocks. And my family and friends, so great. Accompanied me through countless games of Boggle and Connect Four and Jumble Word Puzzles. I did them all. Well, the results of my last test in outpatient therapy suggested that I may never be able to pass a time test like the SAT or the GRE. I think I'll get by. I've even reached a point of being philosophical about the way I left that bewildered audience back in New Mexico. It had to have been a weird evening for them. I'm sorry, but, you know, I've let myself off the hook for that one. And honestly, that night, as strange and unnerving and troubling as it must have been, really wasn't even the stupidest thing I've ever been a part of on a stage. That would involve a musical.
Thank you.
Sexy Naked Girls Radio listeners, have yourself a naked day and make it a naughty night with me, Sandra London, on Playtime with Sandra every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.